An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to face the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning. So I kind of want to weave a few things together, and it's all about refreshing or recreation. It's a wonderful word. I had read or heard somewhere that both Akin Roshi and Thich Nhat Hanh said in various ways that we needed recreation, also recreation, need some time to refresh ourselves, because you're not much use to anybody if you're strung out and burned out. And as I'm sure you know, they were both extremely socially active, but also, and also great serious practitioners. And there's a passage in the Lotus Sutra and the parable of the herbs that I think gives us that sense of refreshment. It's really about the fact that Buddha's teaching uses skillful means to reach everywhere. And for us right now, I think just this image of the rain is powerful. He says Buddha says to Kashyapa, I teach people according to their strengths with various explanations. So you should know, Kashyapa, it is like a great cloud rising over the world, covering everything, everywhere, a beneficent cloud full of moisture, lightning flashing across the sky and the sound of thunder reverberating afar, bringing joy to all. The sun's rays are hidden and the earth becomes cool. The cloud descends and spreads as if it might be touched or plucked from the sky. The rain falls everywhere, coming down on all sides, flowing everywhere without limit, reaching over the face of the earth, into the hidden recesses of mountains, streams, and steep valleys, where plants and trees grow, and medicinal herbs, big trees and small, 100 grains, rice seedlings, sugar cane, and grapevines. All are moistened by the rain and abundantly enriched. The dry ground is soaked, and both herbs and trees flourish. By the same water that comes from that cloud, plants, trees, thickets, and forests, according to their need, receive moisture. All the trees, superior, middling, or inferior, each according to its size, can grow and develop. Roots, stems, branches, and leaves, blossoms, and fruits in brilliant color, one rain goes to all, and all become bright and shiny. Though their bodies, forms, and capacities may be large or small, the moisture they receive is the same, enabling each to flourish. The Buddha is like this. She appears in the world like a great cloud, universally covering all things. Sort of torture right at the moment. But just that feeling, I don't know about you, but when I read that, I just get the feeling of it. Oh, I always think that particularly during drought times, when it does rain, what it must be like for the plants. That it must have, I don't know what, that they're not thinking about the future, but still it would seem that there would be some kind of feeling like, oh, yeah. Just look at them when they're sort of wilted and they get watered and they come back. And I feel I got watered myself, having some time off and going up to the Eastern Sierras particularly. The great joy of my life is hiking beside a stream and somewhat open country, which is why I like the eastern Sierras. Just the sight of it, that clear water running over rocks, sometimes little waterfalls, pools. It just, it's like it's watering my heart. And I went to a beautiful place that's quite accessible, except for the fact that it's, the trail starts at 10,400 feet. So the air is a little thin. And you drive, you get off of Highway 395 at something called Tom's Place, which is, I guess, a tiny little resort or something. I didn't go to Tom's Place, I just turned off. And then you follow a small road up and up and up, because Tom's Place is probably about 7,000 feet or I don't know, something like that. And you go up and up and up, and then there's a parking lot. As soon as you get out of the cars, then you start up the trail, you're beside a creek, a good-sized creek, not a river, but some of some size, not as big as Tassajara Creek, big enough. For me, it's just a joy to walk, and it was mostly uphill, I think, but it wasn't steep. It wasn't difficult. And of course, Rosie had a wonderful time running around on the mountain and sniffing at things and greeting people on the trail and walking down into the water. She doesn't swim, but she likes to wade. I think it's in the John Muir Wilderness, and I think it was called, okay, it's like Little Lakes Basin. It's extremely accessible, and then it gets kind of steep, and there were kind of stairs in the rocks, and I went up a little way, but I was a little concerned about coming back down. My knees don't like downhill, and when it's a big step, you know, like a foot or something, they don't like to land. It's just difficult. And so I went, I don't know how far up I went, but I went up a ways and then came back and found a place to sit by the creek and eat my lunch. There are pictures on the Facebook page of some of this stuff. And it really does feel like I'm letting the water wash my heart. And then we went back down to the trailhead, and there was a bridge across the creek and a campground for backpackers. Just says you can only stay one night, but anyway. But I figured there might be, and there was, a fisherman's trail, a fisher folks trail that went up on the other side of the creek and was even closer to the creek, because it, you know, the one that with it at the formal trailhead was probably about, I don't know, 3-4 feet wide and landscaped. But this one is not. So we went up there a little ways because I felt like I needed more, but I wasn't. But then this was easy. And we went to Lundy Canyon, which is not as high. That was the first hike I did, which was I didn't exactly think it out, but that was a good idea. It started out less than 8,000 feet, and I was already staying at 9, so. You're walking near the creek, and you can hear it, and then sometimes you can see it kind of above it. And then you can go down to the creek itself, to Lundy Creek, and there's a lot of beaver dams and ponds. And then in between them, the water is flowing freely. And you look up and you can see a big waterfall. You know, I don't know if there's a different, I think maybe a different word for it is a cascade, you know, so it's not like it's coming over a lip of something and then falling freely. It's following the rocks, but it's falling. It's long and it's all white water. I've seen that from the top. I walked down a little way in Lundy Canyon, very little way. Yes, it switchbacks, but it's still hard on the knees. But I always wondered what it looked like from the bottom, so I decided to find out, and I hiked up a significant way on there. And the last day we went, we meaning Rosie and I, we went to Convict Lake late in the afternoon. And you can just walk around it, and it's not perfectly flat, but it's pretty, you know, it's just, it rolls a little bit, but it's not a climb at all. It's a very easy hike. And some other bikers and I, we saw a bunch of deer. Rosie never noticed. But I was struck by their ears. I mean, she really does have deer ears. And it's a beautiful lake. There's a little bit of development nearby, but not on the lake. And it was late in the afternoon, so there weren't very many people. And this is also refreshing my heart. You know, it turns out that if you can't go after Labor Day, if you go the week before, not that weekend, but the week before, it's usually pretty, I wouldn't say empty, but uncrowded. Because the kids are already back in school. Bless them. Bless their little hearts. And so it's really nice. And I usually didn't see hardly anybody, except that little lake basin. There wasn't like overrun, but there were quite a few people. But around the lake, I only met these two people. And it's not super high, and it's just sort of set into the Eastern Sierras, as often lakes are. You know, you can see them. You can see where there's probably a lake as you're hiking, and you can see it's sort of like, it looks like it's a dam or something almost. And then you get up to it, and there may or may not be a lake, but often there is. Anyway, it was quite beautiful in the late afternoon, and I took a picture of one, I guess you'd call it a cliff face or a mountain face, but it was all stone. But it was like, you know, when they mix paints and it looks like marble, kind of different colors, but that sense of that. And it was like that, but it was gray and rust and darker gray and so on. And pretty nice. And then I realized that there was, up at the top, there was this kind of a face. And first I thought of Jabba the Hutt. Because it looked sort of, you know, slightly amorphous and sort of like blobby. And then I realized it looked like a frog, and I thought of Suzuki Roshi saying, "Practice like a frog." And then I came to decide, I finally decided it was kind of like the old man of the mountain or something, you know, just blessing us all. And there's a picture of it on the Facebook, I believe. I don't know how well it comes out, you know, it's the kind of thing you stare at it for a while and it keeps changing, and you can see the eye, and then if you see it a little different, that different angle, then you see something else. So these things came up for me because I've been thinking a lot about Rapids period, which starts October 1st. I started listing, and I've got a long list, which I may or may not bother with, but at any rate, was the sense that our practice period is a time of refreshing. It is a time of recreation. And the monsoon time, the time of the rains, was that. In the Buddhist time, that's when they had Ango, or Vedanga, that's a Japanese word. But so they had practice periods, they had times of retreat, because they really could not be wandering around on the roads that were quite muddy at the time. So they would gather and hear the teaching. And I don't think they all gathered with Buddha, because that would have been too many people after the early days. And so probably Subhuti or Mahakashyapa, what's the other one with an S? It's Subhuti and
Shariputra.
Shariputra. Oh, Shariputra, all dharmas. You know, that they would lead a smaller group. But at any rate, they would gather and they would meditate regularly, and they would also study or hear the teaching. And there would be, I would think, a sense of rest and refreshing their practice. So they weren't, I'm sure they went out begging every morning, but they weren't, you know, walking 10 miles, wandering around dusty realms, looking for a town big enough to beg at. And they would get a chance to meditate, which again, I imagine they did every day, but it was easier when they were all together and they were not so much in the business of teaching other people. They were receiving this rain, receiving this teaching. And that practice of having that time of retreat has continued, even though we didn't used to have monsoons. Not entirely clear whether we're going to have monsoons. But at any rate, you know, through the ages, it has been continued without the weather component, I think. And in Japan, and at Asahara, you know, there are practice periods off and on most of the year, 3 month practice periods. At Asahara, not in the summer, because that's guest season, because they have to support themselves, they have to support the whole thing. That's a major support for the San Francisco Zen Center as a whole. And many urban temples have practice periods similar to ours, where they're like, you know, 6-7 weeks. Like sometimes Green Gulch has ones a little longer, but not a lot. And they tend to, we tend to accommodate people's lay lives, work and family and so on. I want to talk about it to remind us what a refreshing experience it can be. It's very satisfying, it's very nourishing. And I believe that practice period, you get out of it what you put into it. If you can let go of most of the daily concerns, if you can make practice period your highest priority after your family and the work that you must do, you may be surprised how much delight and nourishment there is. I know I've told you this before, but I just remember, somebody from the Berkeley Zen Center, it was Shuso, had said at some point, something about, Oh, it really makes a difference sitting twice a day. Yes, it does. And I think the people who've been taught Shuso here are aware of that, because often in the afternoons it's been, you know, me and Shuso, and maybe on Wednesday one or two other people. Practice period is an offering from the temple, and I certainly find it tremendously encouraging to my own practice and to my energy for offering when I'm sitting more and when I give up a lot of the sort of, you know, reading mystery novels, for example. For me, there's a feeling of giving over. For these 7 weeks, I guess, including the Sesshin, for these 7 weeks, this is my life. We've been doing this, I meant to look it up, because each year when I write a cover letter that goes with a statement of intention, and I say, when we open the practice period, I say, this is the whatever number, and I know we're into the middle to high teens. We've been doing this for a long time. In practice period, we do offer more zazen. We have the morning weekday practice as usual, but there's an evening zazen on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And Tuesday and Friday are simply informal zazen, just half an hour of zazen, 5:40 to 6:10. And Wednesday is usually the class, and we sort of jam in Sujiki and Skit Night, and there must be a full moon ceremony in there somewhere too. We found that if we had one on one night and one on the other, people came to one or the other. So Wednesdays are busy. And usually we find a way to have a class. And as you know, Sujiki, we try to put Sujiki at the last class. And so we do the ceremony. And then after that, we go and we have a skit night and the little party. We take the food back off the altar and eat it. And people do wonderful skits, including people online, by the way. I often talk about practice period as a chance to deepen your practice, a chance to stretch. Not wrench, but stretch. Today I want to emphasize the refreshing nature of it. Just go deeply into it. Allow it to permeate your body. Allow it to, I don't remember the word in this translation of the sutra, but at any rate, that sense of penetrating the roots and branches and so on of the various plants, so that they become shiny and new. And that refreshment too is useful, not just to yourself, but to others, because you being refreshed are that much more available. You have a foundation. Reb said to me years ago when I was first Tenzo at Tassajara, charge of the kitchen, he said to me, take care of yourself because they're standing on your shoulders. Take care of yourself, because there are lots of people, including yourself, lots of people and beings, maybe furry ones, whatever, that are standing on your shoulders. And it's not selfish to care for yourself. It's essential to care for yourself. And when we open practice period, we read the opening ceremony, we read Dogen's practice vow. Ehe, as in Ehe Dogen, as in Ehe-ji. It's Ehe Kosu Koso Hotsu Gan Mong. We vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma, that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith, that upon meeting it, we shall renounce worldly affairs and maintain the Buddha Dharma, and that in doing so, the great earth and all living beings together will attain the Buddha way. Although our past evil karma has greatly accumulated, indeed being the cause and condition of obstacles in practicing the way, may all Buddhas and ancestors who have attained the Buddha way be compassionate to us and free us from karmic effects, allowing us to practice the way without hindrance. May they share with us their compassion, which fills the boundless universe with the virtue of their enlightenment and teachings. Listen to this. Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we. Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we. We think of ourselves as lesser beings somehow, not good enough. Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we. We in the future shall be Buddhas and ancestors. Revering Buddhas and ancestors, we are one Buddha and one ancestor. Awakening Bodhi mind, we are one Bodhi mind. Because they extend their compassion to us freely and without limit, we are able to attain Buddhahood and let go of the attainment. Therefore, the Chan Master Lungya said, those who in past lives were not enlightened will now be enlightened. In this life, save the body, which is the fruit of many lives. Before Buddhas were enlightened, they were the same as we. Enlightened people of today are exactly as those of old. Quietly explore the furthest reaches of these causes and conditions, as this practice is the exact transmission of a verified Buddha. Confessing and repenting in this way, one never fails to receive profound help from all Buddhas and ancestors. By revealing and disclosing our lack of faith and practice before the Buddha, we melt away the root of transgressions by the power of our confession and repentance. This is the pure and simple color of true practice, of the true mind of faith, of the true body of faith. And that's what practice periods are about. I'm going to study Dogen in some way. We have some media to present. And go take a look at some of his poetry. Debating between two fascicles, so we'll try and not overwhelm us. And I'm encouraging you to let it overwhelm you in the sense of kind of let it flow, the practice period, let it flow over you, let it flow through you. It's like a creek rippling down the mountainside. But to receive that rain, one must be open to it. Lange said years ago, in a completely different context, that the temple responds to zazen. Comments or questions? Or
what does it mean to practice like a frog? I don't.
Oh, he said that sense of, you know, a frog looks like it's just sitting there completely relaxed.
Okay.
And then a fly comes by.
Oh.
Yeah, it responds to the fly, but it isn't, you know, it doesn't have, it's not the sense of like, where are they? It's calm.
And alert.
Yes. Yes. So it's a description of zazen.
Thank you.
Anything else? Yeah.
Your description of the rain and the roots reminds me of something I heard recently, a speaker talking about how in the forest all the trees are connected. Like their roots aren't joined, but the fungal masses and stuff. And so when it rains, they're all they're holding hands and rejoicing or something like that. I like both of those ideas together. It's nice.
Liam?
Thank you for that talk. I am looking forward to the practice period, although there's always a little part of me that has a little apprehension that I'm aware of at the same time. And also getting out hiking, your descriptions, I felt like I got a little bit of a taste of being out, and we've just been talking about how it's been too long since we've been camping or backpacking. And we've gotten as far as going to Powell's Books and getting a couple of books on camping and backpacking in Oregon. Pick a spot and go now.
You have some pretty nice mountains just east of you.
Yeah, yeah. We can see Mount Hood from down the street.
Steve?
I recently also went camping with Chia, and I was amazed how refreshing it would be. It was, maybe it was even better by the fact that it started terribly. We got a flat tire about maybe just a few miles away from it, but from our campsite, but 120 miles from home. Just a quick plug, don't get farmers insurance emergency roadside assistance, get something else. So it started off terribly, but we were able to make it. I had been kind of worried about the heat wave. It was going to be, we were in Nevada City, so I thought it might be even hotter. It wasn't. It turned out it was about as hot there. But we were under the shady trees. The whole campsite was shady. We both did morning zazen looking at, I specifically looked at it, a tree like, they did in some traditions, and sat on stumps. It's great to sit outdoors. And it wasn't so hot because we were in the shade, and we had the Yuba River to swim in just a few miles away. So I hope that the practice period is refreshing also.
You can always dive into the Yuba River in your mind.
Yes.
Yeah, it was warm where I was, but when you're at 9,000, 10,000 feet, it's not the same. It's always cool in the shade.
Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharmates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them.